This is Talking to America. I'm your host, Aaron Zellman. Our guests today are Elo Jones and Don Doig of the Fully Informed Jury Association. Today we'll be talking about how you can stay free when you go to court. Let's start with Don. What is the purpose of a trial by jury in the traditional and constitutional American legal system?
Traditionally, trial by jury had a political purpose beyond the simple purpose of finding the facts in a case. Did someone commit a crime or not? Beyond that, and the reason why trial by jury is so important, I mean, why not just have a judge decide the facts of a case? Juries are traditionally the conscience of the community. Their purpose is to make sure that the application of the law is consistent with community values, and traditionally it evolved that the purpose of trial by jury is to actually ensure that the rights of the people are protected against prosecutions by the government in cases where there might be a question about the justice of the law, the constitutionality of the law, the fairness of the prosecution. All of that is a proper function of the jury to decide, and in that process to ensure that the system does not begin to systematically violate the rights of citizens. What it comes down to is that the jury traditionally, and for hundreds of years, and we get into the history of this, but for hundreds of years, the jury has had the power, and we maintain the right, to say not guilty if they believe a law is unjust or unconstitutional or misapplied, even if the law is technically violated.
Hey, well, Don, I understand there's some history behind this. There's been
right.
Some famous trials, and maybe you'd like to elaborate on some of those.
Sure. Well, arguably, this power goes way back to the Magna Carta in England, and our legal traditions are derived from the English common law tradition, and it goes clear back to the Magna Carta. And one of the really important early cases was the trial of William Penn and William Mead, who were Quakers, Quaker preachers in London, and this is before William Penn moved to America and founded Pennsylvania. Back then, it was illegal to preach or to practice an unapproved religion. The only approved religion was the Church of England, the Anglican Church. Quakers were not considered a legitimate religion, and it was against the law to preach it. So the authorities closed down William Penn's church, and in defiance, they met in the street out in front of the church and held their service. William Penn and William Mead were arrested and put in the Tower of London. They were possibly facing death for violating this, really what we would say is really a bad law. And the jury, under pressure, the judge told the jury, you know, look, there's no disputing the facts of this case. They did what they're accused of doing, and that's against the law, and you have no choice but to convict. And the jury said, nope, we're not going to do that. So the judge locked him in the jury room for several days without food or water or toilet facilities and still refused to convict, and so they were fined. And those that refused to pay the fine were actually thrown in the Tower of London for several months until the High Court of England threw out the case and affirmed that jurors have the right to vote their conscience, and they are not rubber stamps for the government, and the government cannot punish them for a verdict that the judge or the government thinks is an inappropriate verdict.
Some others, Aaron, following the Magna Carta and William Penn, John Peter Zinger, who was a German immigrant, the jury refused to find him guilty of libel for publishing articles in his paper critical of a king-appointed political figure. And then in the Whiskey Rebellion, when they took the Whiskey Rebellion resistors, the tax resistors, to trial, the jury refused to convict a single one of them, and they actually had to repeal the whiskey tax. Before that, in the Salem witch trials, they finally ended when juries consistently refused to find any of the accused guilty. And we all know about the Fugitive Slave Act, which could not be enforced in certain states because the juries refused to enforce it. Prohibition. Juries refused to enforce prohibition laws. So this has been a long tradition of political control by the people who do, in fact, own the government. It has been a feedback to our government. It is a check and balance on government, and it is an ultimate veto power against bad laws passed by the legislature.
And in the case of the Zinger trial, that was actually, along with the William Penn trial, considered to be important precedents when it came time to write the Bill of Rights. So these verdicts by juries ended up becoming part of our legal foundation in America.
Well, Elo, I have a question for you along these lines. If trial by jury is in the Bill of Rights, does that imply it has a political role?
Yes, and we were just talking about that a little bit, of course. And the political role of trial by jury, first of all, juries are, as Don was talking about earlier, juries are constituted to protect private sovereign citizens from government tyranny, and they can do that by refusing to convict no matter what the charge, no matter what the law, no matter what the evidence or the facts in the case. Juries can simply refuse to convict. Trial by jury is, of course, mentioned in the Bill of Rights 3 times and in the Constitution itself 1 more time. So it's set forth as a having this political role as a check and balance on government 4 times in our Constitution. Now, why is it there? Well, as we know, and we see this sometimes, of course, in concealed carry and weapon carry cases, we have the right to self-defense. We have the right to life, and you do not have the right to life unless you can have, unless you can exercise your right to defend that life. Jurors simply refuse to convict people who are trying to defend their life or the lives of their family. And in doing so, they can circumvent all of the government employees, all of the people who work for the government, who are part of the political structure of government, by vetoing the actions of the government. And unfortunately, it still, of course, harms the people who are charged and being persecuted by government because they have to pay for an attorney sometimes. They sometimes lose their jobs. We had a case we worked on of a fellow driving through Ohio with weapons, which he had legally, of course, as you would have to under the Second Amendment, but he didn't have legal permission in Ohio, and so they arrested him, and they trashed his vehicle and confiscated a lot of his property, including his computer, which he needed for work. And he didn't get a jury trial. We hoped he would get a jury trial because we were educating all the people in that area so that they could step in and exercise their political role of serving as a check and balance on government. And we continue to do that. That's what the jury is for, to protect citizens against government action that is unfair. Juries, of course, also can protect society from truly dangerous people who are really criminals, where there's a victim or those people are violent or need to be locked away and to keep society safe. But mostly juries are there to protect innocent people or people who have not done anything that is actually a crime, where there's no victim, and that way act as a political check on our government and our legislature's creation of unreasonable laws.
Well, let me jump into a question here that I'm sure a lot of people are thinking about at this moment is, what is the legal doctrine of jury nullification?
That's actually the name of the legal doctrine. It's jury nullification. And it is that jurors have the power to vote their conscience and to acquit if they believe that justice requires it, if they believe the law is wrong or unjust or unconstitutional. That's not to say that they have the power to bring a conviction beyond what has been charged by the prosecutor, and it does not mean that the actions of the jury have any precedent in terms of changing the law or anything like that. It's that in this particular case that is being heard by this particular jury, they can say not guilty and let that particular defendant go free. And that's the extent of their power. But it's a power that cannot be questioned under our system and that is absolute. 2 reasons for that. A not guilty verdict cannot be appealed, and jurors cannot be punished for their verdict, even if it goes against the letter of the law. And the oath that they're asked to take is actually a false oath because it's not really enforceable.
It's often said, Don, that there are 4 boxes to defend freedom. Would you like to elaborate on those?
Sure. Probably in order of which one you go to first, there's the soapbox, which is the First Amendment, the right to freedom of speech, and there is the ballot box, which if we're not talking about electronic voting and vote scam and things like that, that's the ability to elect representatives in a constitutional republic. Both of those are under attack these days, as we know. The third box is the jury box, And the fourth box, of course, is the cartridge box. Now, the cartridge box is the last resort, and we all hope that it never comes to that in defense of our freedom. So trial by jury is getting right down there, though. Once you get to trial by jury, you haven't got many options left to preserve our freedom, and that's under attack, too. So trial by jury as an institution is under attack in several different ways. Just recently, we had a juror in Idaho who was actually arrested for voting her conscience in the jury room, and that was they finally had to dismiss that. But I mean, that's what it's come to, and we've got pressure from prosecutors to intimidate people with charge multiplication so that they end up pleading guilty. Even if they're innocent, they sometimes plead guilty. So there's all kinds of ways that trial by jury is under attack, and not least of which is their attempt to intimidate the juror into thinking that they don't have the power of jury nullification.
Why is jury nullification under attack?
Well, because if jury nullification becomes really widespread, it would be hard to sustain the current load of bad law that we're saddled with.
When our country was founded, Aaron, all of the citizens understood that they had the right to nullify bad laws and to refuse to enforce bad laws when they served on a jury. And because a jury is an exquisitely constituted body of 12 disinterested citizens, it doesn't mean that we had scoff laws running around. It meant that when 12 people sat down and deliberated together, they could determine as members of their community whether or not they wanted to enforce those laws. But what has happened over time is that there have been some decisions which first said the judges no longer had to inform juries that they had this authority, and that because everybody knew it. It was assumed that everyone already knew that they had the authority to nullify. And then that was taken and eventually was transmuted or warped into saying that even attorneys in court could not tell juries they had the right to nullify. Not that they didn't have to, but that they couldn't. About the only people these days who are able to inform jurors in the courtroom that they have the authority to nullify or to veto bad law are people who represent themselves and have more latitude than do lawyers, who, of course, being members of the bar and officers of the court, can be punished by losing their license or forbidden to practice in certain areas if they do something which is not amenable to the judge. So we've lost this authority which we've always had over time, and as the whole system of juries is being attacked, nullification is not only being attacked, but we have seen in writing in jury instructions, one state from the state of Washington, it actually says in their jury instructions that nullification is against the law. It isn't, and so that's why we're here, to help people exercise this authority that they have. When a jury is constituted at a trial, it is the highest authority in the courtroom. It has higher authority than the judge. As John said, or as Don said, that their verdict cannot be appealed if they find the defendant not guilty. So we're not teaching something new. We are restoring a right as much as when this country was founded, we had the right to keep and bear arms without the government infringing upon that at all. We had, at that time, jurors, private citizens, had the right when they served on a jury to nullify or veto or refuse to enforce bad laws or misapplied laws. And so you can see how there is this erosion of the free exercise of our rights that goes fairly well across the board.
Yeah, our guests today are Elo Jones and Don Doig of Fully Informed Jury Association. Eli, I have another question for you. It's along the lines of what you were just talking about. If someone is called for jury duty, are there other obstacles that are put in front of them? Are there other things being done to make it more difficult for a juror to be honest and to judge the facts of the case as well as the law?
Yes, Aaron, these days, as a matter of fact, that's an excellent question. And for some of your listeners, if they're called for jury duty, they may face this during voir dire, which is the process of selecting the actual jurors from the jury pool. They may be asked, for instance, if they know about jury nullification. They may be asked if they know about FIJA. They may be asked if they're willing to follow the law as it's given to them by the judge without question. They probably won't add the words without question, but that's what they're implying. If they know about FIJA, if they know about jury nullification, if they say they will follow the law as long as they don't have any, they don't find that it's being misapplied, if they make any conditional responses to that question, the chances are about 99 out of 100 that they will be excused from jury duty. If they, in fact, and this is, we had this happen, if they would, in fact, say during this process of questioning potential jurors, if they would raise their hand and say, I want, as I understand it, I have the right to nullify, Your Honor, I think I have the right to nullify the law if I think it's being misapplied or it's an unfair or unjust or unconstitutional law, and I understand that that's my right as a jury, as a juror, the judge may dismiss the entire jury pool as being tainted.
Well, that could be good, depending upon the circumstances.
All those people will go home and think, certainly.
Might be a silver lining in that cloud.
But that is an obstacle that jurors face, trying to get even to get on a jury and be honest by saying that, yes, they understand that they have all this authority. And then if they are on the jury, as we just had with this case in Idaho, which Don mentioned, and during jury deliberations, you might say something such as, well, I don't think this law is really fair, or I answer to a higher power, or I don't know, I think the way the police gathered evidence is a violation of the person's rights, even though the judge said we had to ignore that. There's a good chance that they will be removed from the jury, and we know of instances where jurors have been prosecuted for felony perjury because they have taken the oath and then made statements like that in the sanctity of the jury deliberation room.
That still remains really rare, though.
So far.
Yeah.
So if someone tells the judge that they believe that the Almighty's law is a higher law and more important than the state law, what would the judge's attitude be?
They would probably be excused from serving on the jury. In fact, I would almost guarantee that they would be excused from serving on the jury.
Wouldn't that be a giveaway to all the rest of the jurors as to what they're dealing with?
Yes.
The criminality of it all?
Well, but
to be blunt, polite, diplomatic.
People have been educated in government schools to believe that government is, in fact, sometimes the highest authority in known existence. And so if you ask them, if you're in the courtroom, which is the higher authority, your creator or the judge, they will say, oh, well, in the courtroom, of course, the judge is the only authority. They will say that.
The judge makes them take an oath, and that can be pretty intimidating. An oath to follow the law as the judge gives it to them.
Is that the oath?
Yeah.
Okay. Welcome to the Soviet Union. How are juries selected, and how has this changed during the history of our country?
It's mostly a random process as far as getting the jury pool assembled. They have a jury wheel, which is randomly selected from driver's license lists and voter registration lists. And so the people who show up come from those lists. And at that point, it's fairly random. But then you get into the voir dire process, which can be really intrusive and really invasive of privacy. And then they do their best to select the lowest common denominator among the jury pool and eliminate anybody who, in many cases, has any education. They certainly eliminate anybody who seems to be a rebel or has any kind of independent thought going on. And we think that, in contrast, what should happen is that the first 12 jurors that are there, as long as they don't have any personal interest in the case, a relative on trial or a business relationship, or that sort of thing. Other than that, the first 12 there should be seated. Then you have a random jury. But if you had that, then you might get a lot more nullification going on, and that would be highly inconvenient. That's expensive for the government, and it's embarrassing for the prosecutor.
Early in our country's history, Aaron, potential jurors were brought in, and they were asked if they had any compelling reason they could not render a fair verdict, and if there was, they were excused, and the rest were seated, or 12 were seated from that group. And as Don said, people were only excused from jury duty if they knew one of the litigants or they were the cousin of the victim or something like that. Other than that, we trusted each other to render a fair and reasonable verdict, and it seemed to work very well. And, of course, juries, again, at that time, refused to enforce bad laws.
Well, let me ask you a question, if you wouldn't mind speculating, as to why we don't trust each other as much anymore.
I think it's because we have been taught, many of us have been taught, and again, in government schools, that rather than place our trust in each other, we should place our trust in government. When you are bombarded constantly with, don't trust this merchant, we need more laws to protect you, the consumer, from buying his cookies because, you know, he may be trying to kill his customers, don't trust this man to provide you with safe working conditions because obviously he's doesn't care about his workers, and so government will protect you. When we're taught that we need to send our children to government schools because homeschoolers obviously abuse their children and don't teach them anything and keep them isolated and probably working at sweatshop labors. I hear these horror stories. Most of these alarms that are being raised, they're all around us, come to us from statists and government employees who have a vested interest in protecting their paycheck and their positions of power. I'm not saying that they even do this consciously. It's how they live.
Do you think that all the things that you've been talking about here might be the overlying reason or the fundamental reason why jury nullification is not taught in schools? I would think if you even went to law school, they're not teaching this. Or am I wrong?
You're correct.
Right. It would shift the balance of power in this country if it were unfettered. And obviously the powers that be that control the schools and the media and such don't want to see that happen. A lot has been invested in getting the government grown to the place it is right now, and they don't want to do anything to upset that apple cart.
Yeah, you talked about jurors being punished, you know, a couple hundred years ago. What about today?
There have been at least a couple cases that I know of where it was attempted. Maybe Elo knows more, but in one case, a juror in Colorado was convicted for apparently supposedly not being forthcoming during the questioning and not volunteering information, and that was overturned on appeal. And then there was a case in Idaho that just concluded, and those charges were dropped. So I'm not actually aware of anywhere charges have actually stuck.
I'm not either. But what has happened, Aaron, over the last 20 years or so, and especially since Fiji's been around to tell people about their authority or remind them of their authority as jurors, we're seeing far fewer jury trials, as people are so afraid of the machinery of the government justice or injustice system that they will plead out rather than risk any kind of a trial because they're fearful. They realize that the judge probably will not allow all of the evidence that they need to present for their defense to be heard by the jury. They're fearful that they will lose and receive some kind of mandatory maximum sentence or mandatory minimum sentence. It's very long. They know by the time they have been caught up in the cogs of this machine of the legal system, they can see that they are going to be fearfully abused and that justice will probably not be rendered, and so they will do anything to hide from worse punishment than they may get if they simply plead out and take something. And another side of that, of course, is that for most of these people, they have families, and going to trial and mounting a defense can decimate a family financially. And so if they want their wives and children, their wife and child or whatever, to have anything left while they are in prison, the odds being good that they will go whether they're innocent or not, then it's best if they just plead out and at least leave their family with their home and their meager savings.
Well, all right. So let us speculate a little. We have a nation full of people who fear the government, a government that apparently is so corrupt that it's not, you simply can't fix it. What do we tell people to do to bring back a Bill of Rights culture?
Some things I tell them to do personally and also as part of Fiji. I tell them, whoever the incumbents are in office, vote them out. Change them every 4 years till they get the idea that we aren't putting up with career despots in office. Serve on juries. Run to serve on juries And unless they show you a dead person, not a violated statutory law put in by some bureaucrat, unless they show you a harmed human being, refuse to vote in favor of a guilty verdict, refuse to render a verdict of guilty. I tell people as well, because if juries fail to protect our rights and if juries cannot protect the free exercise of those rights, we need to be able to defend ourselves from people breaking into our houses and becoming predatory. I tell people to practice their, to spend time on the range and practice and make sure that they have a good aim. And I'm being honest. That's what I tell people these days.
Good for you.
Also, I would point out that over the last however many years, 15, 20 years, the powers that be have lost control of the flow of information. And the latest and greatest in that story has been the Internet.
Today there was an article on the Internet that came out of England about Rupert Murdoch, who's a media baron, mm-hmm. who's made it very clear that the old media is dead. The bloggers, the Internet, that websites are going to replace newspapers. So
yeah,
I think that's good news for freedom.
Great hope there, because the Internet is a hotbed of alternative history and alternative thinking on questions like the Bill of Rights culture. So I think everybody should get plugged into that, because you're not going to find out the truth by watching the evening news and by reading the daily paper.
And by the way, everything we've been talking about today is as important for defendants to know about demanding a trial by jury. And, of course, we assist sometimes in cases by sending a lot of literature out or providing literature for them for people to give out to the jury pool in their community. But I want to say that this is also very important for defendants to demand a jury trial, demand their rights, and not give them up because they're intimidated by the court system.
Elo, can you tell people where they can obtain your information and literature and a website?
I would be happy to. Our website is www.fija, that's F as in Frank, I, J as in John, A, .org. And if you'd like a free packet of information, we have an 800 number. It's 1-800-TELJURY, tell with one L, jury. And I'll give that to you in numbers as well. It's 1-800-835-5879. One more time, 1-800-835-5879. If you leave your name and address at that number, you will receive a free packet of information, which I hope you will read and then share with someone else.
What can people do, aside from getting the information from you, the free packet, to help spread the word and to help enlighten, you know, millions of Americans about how their rights are being destroyed by not allowing them to judge the law as well as the facts of the case?
Aaron, we have a free PowerPoint presentation that we're happy to send out along with a packet of literature. We encourage people, if you belong to a church group or a civic organization, even the PTA, if you have a group of Cub Scouts, if you're a teacher, whatever you do, if you have a group in which you participate, get some of our literature, get our PowerPoint presentation if you have a way to use it, and schedule a time to have a talk about jury duty and what it is and what it means in this country, and share these ideas with those around you and open it up for some discussion. And if we have a speaker in the area, and we do have speakers around, and those are listed on our website under state contacts, they'll be happy to come and speak to your group. But we have found that people, once they've read our literature and the idea sparks with them and lights a fire in their mind, they are quite capable of holding a discussion group with their local civic group or whomever, or even just with your family or at your workplace. Write to us, get some literature, and spread the word. Hand out our website. We have posters you can put up. We have a lot of information to share.
Why should gun owners pay very close attention to what you're doing, to what you're telling people, and how will they benefit if they do so?
Well, in a sense, a trial by jury is the peaceful mechanism by which we protect all the other rights in the Bill of Rights. You can protect, for instance, the right to keep and bear arms when the BATF or local police arrest someone on bogus firearm charges to simply vote not guilty in those cases if you're on the jury. And so that protects the Second Amendment to the Bill of Rights. It protects all the other rights in the Bill of Rights through the process of trial by jury. And I submit that that's a preferable way to protect the Bill of Rights than by finally resorting to the cartridge box, if we can do that.
Well, let me ask you one last very simple question. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you think is crucial for people to know about?
I wanted to make one point. Jurors, when they are constituted as a body, as a jury, have, again, the ultimate authority in the courtroom. They cannot be punished for their verdict. And they protect not only our rights, they have the power to protect not only the rights guaranteed under the Bill of Rights, but all human rights, which are intrinsic for all humans in the world. And jurors have those rights as well. And certainly the highest one they must use when they serve on a jury is to exercise their conscience and their independent thinking mind in rendering a verdict, no matter what the judge or the prosecutor or anybody else tells them to do.
And for as much as they apparently hate this right and this power of the people, they have not yet succeeded in prosecuting anyone successfully for it in all of the trials all around the country where it's been an issue. It is still abundantly clear that you have the right and the power to vote your conscience as a juror, and they're not going to punish you because they don't have that kind of power.
Today our guests have been Elo Jones and Don Doig of FIJA, Fully Informed Jury Association, and they've been helping us learn about fully informed jury and jury nullification, and hopefully we're going to be able to put this to good use. The Patriot Act probably will create plenty of reasons and opportunities for people to have to deal with the court system. I've been your host, Aaron Zellman. This has been Talking to America, and remember, if you won't defend your rights, don't complain when you lose them.
Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of JPFO.org or its members. Talkin' to America is a production of JPFO.org.